Ever wondered who and what is shaping Luxembourg? This is your Lux Unplugged podcast with your hosts, Adrian and Thierry.
Hi, I'm Adrian. Welcome back to another episode of the Lux Unplugged podcast. Just one thing, I recorded this episode earlier this year. It was meant to be released in Q1, but personal priorities didn't allow me to. Today I'm delving into the world of venture capital together with Yannick Osfeld, partner at Mangrove Capital Partners. Mangrove is an established name in the venture capital field, celebrated for its early bets on companies that have become household names like telecommunication firm Skype or web development company called Wix. In this conversation, we will uncover how this firm has become a pivotal force in the European and Israeli tech ecosystem and beyond. Yannick walks me through the serendipitous journey that led him from a prospective MBA student at Columbia to a player at Mangrove, highlighting the chief decisions and moments that shaped his career in venture capital. We explore Mangrove's strategic investments in disruptive tech startups and discuss why Luxembourg is not just a base but a central hub in their global strategy. Also, Yannick delves into the evolving investment landscape, particularly in cutting-edge fields such as AI or health tech, and reflects how these technologies are set to make an enormous impact across various industries and improve our productivity. We also tackle the challenges and shifting opportunities within the current economic climate, emphasizing the resilience and innovative spirit needed to navigate these times. Whether you're an entrepreneur, an investor, or simply curious about the future of tech and business, there is a great deal to learn about how small nations like Luxembourg are making big waves on the global stage. But now, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Yannick Osfeld, partner at VC firm Mangrove Capital Partners. Yannick, welcome to Lux Unplugged.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. Could you just do me a favor and introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. But first, let me perhaps kick off by saying I'm a big fan of the podcast. I think it's fabulous that you launched it. There are so many good stories about Luxembourg out there, like hidden gems, and just brilliant. So thanks for doing that. So back to me, I'm a partner at Mangrove, pan-European Israeli early-stage venture capital firm. I'm also born and raised in Luxembourg City, and as many Luxembourgers, obviously lived around many places around the world.
Yeah, you just said you're partner at Mangrove, which we're going to discuss in a few moments' time. So what led you to this? What was the process that led you to becoming a VC or a VC specialist, a venture capital specialist?
Yeah, sure. It's actually quite a fun story, a bit of a serendipitous happening, if you want so. So I was literally on my way back to New York, wanted to move back, was about to start my MBA at Columbia. And a couple of weeks before the start, a friend told me, hey, listen, now, I know you want to do this venture thing. Why don't you get to know the guys at Mangrove? They're fabulous. They're doing a great job. So basically, I knocked on the door, and we had an interview chat, if you want so. It was back in 2015, and that led me to staying a couple of weeks, spending time with them, doing a quote pre-MBA internship. And at the end of that time, essentially, it was pretty clear it was a good match. So I decided to stay with the team. Before that, I launched when I graduated in 2012. And then joined the small venture firm in New York, nowadays called FJ Labs, and spent a couple of months with them. That's where I really got to know the entire tech world and venture capital world, what's actually going on there. Because back then, I started in Brussels and Argentina. There wasn't much tech, and there wasn't much talk about startups. And so that led me to basically discover that whole space. Obviously, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't fall in love with it. And so after that experience, to cut a long story short, I launched two startups. One startup was great experience, but failed, as so many startups. The second one did quite well, is still running, and also joined for a bit more than, I think, close to 2 years, strategy department for the restructuring of the second largest bank in Luxembourg, formerly called named Dexia and now called BIL.
It's interesting. So at the time when you decided to interview with Mangrove instead of going for the MBA, How did you think about the opportunity cost at that particular point in time?
When you go for an MBA, or you ask yourself the question, what do I want to do afterwards? And having worked on the strategy of an established mid-sized bank, running basically an organization, if you want so. And on the other hand, having launched two startups, I realized that I'm much better on the strategy side than on the operation side. Or better is perhaps the wrong term. I'm much more excited. And so what became quite clear to me that while I love, you know, the world of startups, that I'm probably much better an investor than an operator. And that's purely from what I prefer to do. And so it was quite clear to me that after the program, I want to get into venture. And so the opportunity cost for me here was, frankly, quite low. The only is, well, not having, you know, not being able to live a couple of years in New York, which is obviously a fun city. And I had quite some friends at the time there. My decision was, hey, I want to do this. I have an opportunity. This is one of the best firms in Europe. So better do that, right? So follow kind of my passion versus fun, if you want to.
And just a quick one, because it's interesting to say that you separate out the operational versus the strategic view of things. But from your time so you talked about the two startups. In a few words, what was the major lesson you took out of this from running a startup or creating a startup?
You really need to be in love with your idea. Creating anything from scratch is just hard, meaning, you know, it's not a straight line. There are tons of challenges. There are times where it feels like nothing is going into the right direction. There are times where, you know, things seem amazing. And you will do this over a long time, right? So you should expect to do this for at least 10 years, most probably more. And to do so, you really not need to love the idea you're doing or the mission, whatever gets you excited and gets you up in the morning. For me, was, you know, the ideas, really, I was more going after the business opportunities, kind of liked it, but, you know, I wasn't enamored with the ideas. And that was, I think, the most important lesson. The second point is, I'm the kind of person, you know, what's very hard about venture is obviously you change, you're consistently bombarded with new ideas, with new trends, it's never ending, right? And tech is just, you know, the wheel is spinning faster and faster in technology. And I'm that kind of guy, I can't get enough of it. Often when I hire young people in the firm, I ask them, you know, you're going to eat investment decks for 2 years. Like literally you're going to dream about it. You're going to see them in the morning, in the evening, all the time. And if after that, you still love doing it, well, then, you know, this is probably a career path that makes sense for you. If not, you might be bad on the operation side. So that's probably, you know, it's basically kind of what you like doing. Many operators I know, they have a hard time with that, right? As a venture investor, we tend to get involved, but it's very important that we draw a clear line, right? We are not running the company. We're there to support. We're there to, you know, we call ourselves, you know, we like to see ourselves as cheerleaders, but we are not running the business. So it's fundamental to understand that when you think about, hey, what do I want to do?
Right. Yeah, so you gave a broad overview on how you essentially as a person you operate and how you tick every day, and clearly, yeah. So the venture capitalist side of things has kind of won the battle between operations and being more strategic. So now, talking about Mangrove, which is a Luxembourg-based business, again for the audience, because you're saying you said it was one of the top European VCs. It's a Luxembourgish business, to be clear. So 100%. For the audience, how would you describe Mangrove? So in other words, in what kind of areas do you specialize? I can already sense what you're going to say. And from my point of view, again, as we are, as a Luxembourg venture, we're trying to understand, you know, what was Luxembourg, the choice of establishment for that business?
Yes. So let me give you a quick overview on Mangrove and then on why Luxembourg 20 years ago and why now. I'd say, so Mangrove is a pan-European Israeli early stage venture firm. We focus on those geos, why not exclusively. And you know, the mission is very simple. We back very early on tech companies that are disruptive and can become long-lasting, large, iconic businesses. That's what we do. That's why we exist. And, you know, when you think about Europe, when Mangrove was founded 20 years ago, in 2000, Europe was really a desert. It wasn't, you know, as I mentioned before, even in 2012, when I went to New York, there wasn't much talk in Benelux in that case about tech and tech startups. And the aim of the firm back then was, hey, you know, let's bring venture investing to Europe. And, you know, obviously today the picture looks very, very different. The firm expanded to Israel since. And, you know, if you want to understand the DNA of the firm, it's essentially everything started with Skype and Wix, the first two larger success stories. And they're really, I think, at the origin of the firm's DNA. And well, since then we have been very fortunate to invest at seed in four more global success stories. And, you know, if you think about it, back then, Luxembourg was very simple. The three founders who launched the firm, they were based in Luxembourg. So that's why they kicked off the business here. Why Luxembourg today? Well, because it's actually an amazing place from which to cover Europe and Israel. And let me explain you why. Europe is a funky place, right? It is an exciting place. There's a rich history, but it's also a special place, meaning it's ever evolving. And if you think about it today, there's a lot of hype around Paris. It's probably the hottest tech ecosystem. But that's today. You know, yesterday was London. Tomorrow it's another city. And this is really key. If you want to play consistently in Europe, you have to be truly international. You cannot just focus on one single market. And that's part of my DNA, and I'll get back to that later, but really the core of Mangrove's DNA. And another point is being based in Luxembourg, obviously, right? One of the smallest countries in Europe, you are really forced to play international and have an international mindset and also a very deep international network. And, you know, I always like to give that example. When you walk in our office, you hear between the doors 10 languages. And it's very normal, right? If I'm in venture firms in other cities, that's not the case. Probably two, sometimes three. And being based here, we also travel on a weekly basis to meet with the founders, literally, that we back on the ground. We always go. One point that is also quite important is about mindset and perhaps perception. You know, we don't think locally. We cannot. And the same goes when it comes to ambition. And great founders, they tend to search for that. And they do not fall into, you know, they don't want to fall into local pattern thinking. And so we really push our founders to think big and to, we do everything we can to support them in realizing their ambition. And personally, you know, that's very much, you know, people always ask me, hey, why Mangrove? You know, why not another firm? Why did, I said, well, it's very simple because I deeply believe in that. And it's also the reason that why I doubled down on Mangrove. And it is, you know, in my opinion, only truly international venture firm in Europe. And that's the only way we can, you know, go for another 20 successful years by playing that game.
I wanted to specify, so you mentioned Wix and Skype and all these successes. So I think all these companies today, they've become unicorns, as we call them, right? So I think you have accumulated the, what is it, 10... track record of 10 unicorns so far?
No, six unicorns.
Six unicorns, which is, again, thinking about the probability of hitting the unicorn out of, as you were saying, like lots of or millions of decks that you have to eat for years.
Yep.
There must be, especially for, like, again, small firm in Luxembourg with, as you said, with the international openness and having to kind of force yourself to expand your network. So the secret sauce, I understand, is it's not only just a network, but there must be, like, because Luxembourg is not known for being an entrepreneurial country, right? It's quite conservative, as you know, as a local person. So I'm still wondering, you know, there must be some element of secret sauce that you guys have.
It's a very good question. I split it up in two because you said, you know, Luxembourg is not so entrepreneurial, it's actually yet conservative. We get to ask a question often, and we say how we call Luxembourg is really the land of opportunity, in the sense that if you have a good idea and you really want to do it, you get tons of support, like really a lot of support, private and public. And that's quite unique. And is it a startup nation? I say no. And the reason for me, the reasons are very simple. It's just, you know, startups, they have to be very, very efficient. They don't have much cash. And if you have the highest minimum wage, okay, at least one of the top in Europe, housing shortage, etc., it's just very difficult to start. Not impossible, but a bit more difficult. However, I'm seeing a very, very good, like it's the ecosystem is developing quite well, right? Obviously proportional to the size of the country, but I see more and more good companies emerge. Not only tech, by the way, across entrepreneurship in general. Now, what's our secret sauce? I know a ton of cool Luxembourgers out there. Most I know, they are super international, they're very driven, etc. The question is just, you know, how to catch them and when to catch them, right? And so how we think about finding people is quite interesting. We launched something called the Mango Fellows Program now, I think 2 years ago. And so we, every year we hire people for 6 months and where they literally see everything in the firm. And our promise is very simple. You stay in the Mango network, not only within the 6 months, but actually very long term. You're invited to our events, to develop relationships and keep those people close to the firm, essentially. That's how we think about it. It's very difficult to find people who venture capital is a job. You're kind of 24/7. You really need to love it. So here's like, number one, you need to find those people, quite rare. And then number two, you need to find them in Luxembourg or bring them to Luxembourg, right? So these are two challenges. And we started that off and actually it's working quite well. And so that's our approach to challenge that. And then ultimately, it's just a certain type of people we're looking for, right? Extremely hungry, entrepreneurial, and very, very outward looking. And if you have that, yeah, please contact me.
It's interesting. The other day I was reading an article about the founder of SoftBank, mm-hmm. who was known for I'm not sure if he's still doing it today, was known for writing checks within a taxi ride after you pitching an idea without a deck for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I always kind of wondered, I mean, he's not always been very successful, but this guy must have had something in it. What do you think of this kind of individual in your industry?
So there's obviously, you know, you can SoftBank, multiple vehicles, you know, the guy obviously has a pedigree and has a background that's quite impressive. So whatever people say, always say, don't write him off. That's for sure. The second point is, you know, there are many ways to approach investing, if it's in venture in any other industry. He, you know, at the stage we invest in very early, and the longer I'm in this industry, it's many things have to go right. And so I cannot write a check just in a taxi ride. Because there are, you know, there might be some numbers, some performance numbers, but ultimately I need to get to know the person and, you know, understand if she or he is really has this hunger to stay in this. And when I kicked off the industry, it was difficult for me to understand, right? I looked at the CV and I was, oh, it's great. That's a smart person. But then I understood, well, entrepreneurs, you know, they come in all shapes and forms. Really a very classic, you know, CV people, but also very wacky people. So basically that quite quickly I had to abandon my framework that I had when I came into the industry. The second point is only now, you know, once I was lucky to be involved with some companies that became now very large, you see what it means to have founders that are driven, right? There's so many issues. And I can only understand that by developing a relationship with them. I think like, really the minimum is probably the absolute minimum probably like 2 months. And I guess, you know, if you know them, you know, for 4, 5, 6 months, then you start understanding a bit what's under the hood. And by the way, the same for founders. I think, you know, the market got a little bit out of hand during COVID. You want to understand the same from venture investors, especially early institutional investors. They stick around for a long time and they play a quite important role on your board. So you want to understand how they tick, right? Are they really in it? And will those guys support me / go the extra mile, right? And so if you can, I would tell entrepreneurs, get to know the guys whose money you take, especially early on.
That brings me on to actually a question that's bridging what you just said, because as you're in the tech business, we'll talk about technology a bit in a few moments, because as you say, that you have to stay on top of things very, very often or all the time so that you kind of keep up with all the changes. But as you talked about the relationship between founders and venture capitalists, so I'm putting that into context with the current economic situation, you know, with interest rates having gone, I mean, the rate of change of the interest rate having gone up very quickly recently, which was the main factor of higher technology valuations and so forth. So they say, I mean, again, if you're good at investing, then that should not be too much of an issue. But, you know, no cash flows or no free cash flow was not an issue for a long time because of the low interest rates. In your situation, as you've been in the business for a number of years and you have this good relationship with your founders, with the entrepreneurs, so what are the current things that they are talking about to you, especially, you know, in terms of challenges that they're experiencing at the minute? Can you just walk me through a few examples? And again, as you said, you know, you're not here to step in operationally, but what kind of concrete example can you give me to highlight what you're currently doing for them?
So I think there were two questions. The first one is kind of what keeps entrepreneurs up at night, this current environment. And the second is, you know, are there examples, what they had to do? So I think number one is markets always move in cycles. I mean, everybody knows that. And we are long-term investors. So how we think about it is just, you know, when the cycle is down, there's no liquidity. When it goes up, there's liquidity. And today, there's not much liquidity. But in essence, you know, for entrepreneurs, and it's important to recognize that the last few years have been really tough, right? First, you had COVID. Then you had 2 years of economic downturn, and it's not over yet. While we see now the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, this is rough, and you see entrepreneurs being tired from this. But, you know, I think in those times, it's just super important to always remind yourselves, you know, things move in cycles, and, you know, the negative ones come to an end. And if we can agree on one thing is, you know, I wouldn't bet against the internet, and I wouldn't bet against innovation. It's that simple. Now, if I, you know, to finish on the macro situation, before I get to the examples, you know, I've been writing, we have been saying publicly, I've been writing that about that on my blog, you know, end of this year, things will start to look better. And the reason is very simple. You know, public market investors, as long as public markets don't perform well, right, the money won't trickle down into private markets / also not in startups. And public market investors have been plowing money, right, into the Magnificent Seven, you know, the Apples of this world, for quite some time now. They can't do that forever, right? And as soon as they start diversifying a little bit, the market will get better. And we see early signs of that. And with it, you know, M&A opportunities / more liquidity will come to the market as well. So that was our key message to entrepreneurs. So what were the examples for entrepreneurs? You have to imagine COVID, some, you know, the entire business activity ceased to exist. That's like the most drastic examples. We had a Luxembourgish company called Job Today, right, for blue collar jobs in the hospitality industry. COVID, there was no hospitality industry, it was life. So what you do, I think the CEO did an extremely remarkable job. He basically restructured his business, you know, to live another day, essentially. Today, he has a business that is doing very well, is profitable, super efficient, right? But those cuts, entrepreneurs had to take those decisions very, very quickly. If he didn't, and, you know, I can't imagine anything harder than that for a business owner. I think the last 2 years, they were, in that sense, difficult. What I saw was that some businesses grew quite, you know, substantially during COVID, just by most people just going 100% digital. And that dropped, right? We went back to a normal adoption curve. They had to rethink the entire sales organizations. They had to cope with, you know, losing clients and communicate it to their shareholders. And then the markets dried up. So then on top, go to for profitability. You just have to imagine that, you know, all the changes they went through. And, you know, today we kind of have two types of businesses in this market. We have, you know, the great businesses that really have a shot at becoming, you know, called true unicorns, not only on paper. And those will raise capital. That's not a problem. It's a matter of valuation, perhaps, but they will raise capital. And they are. And then they're the good companies. Right? They're great. They're good businesses. Those, but perhaps not that, not the growth potentials as the others have. And those businesses, essentially, you know, what we did was get them to profitability and get them ready for the next cycle where things look better. What do I mean by that is get to profitability, you are your own boss, right? You basically manage your own, you're the boss of your own destiny, if you want so. And now let's get ready, right? As the market, when it picks up again, perhaps you want to sell your business if there's a great opportunity. Perhaps you want to continue running it, right? Or, you know, perhaps you even want to, you know, raise more capital and grow, right? But essentially, but you need to get into that zone because you just don't know when things change. So that's basically how we advised our companies over the last, let's say, 2 years, how to navigate the market.
That was from the perspective of your entrepreneurs who you say they've been weathering the storm and this period very well and had to make hard decisions to get there. But your underlying investors, you said at the end of 2024, you're expecting a kind of a pickup in activity and, you know, public markets kind of leading the way again. Is that how you investors feel as well? What is their feedback based on what you see in terms of pulse?
Yeah. So I said things will get better. Not sure about the magnitude of the pickup, right? But things will get better. Right now, I think if I look at the venture market, it's still, I think right now it's quite frosty out there. It's not obvious to raise capital. It just takes longer. I'm raising for some of my companies. They're just more diligent, right? But the capital is still out there, especially at the earlier stages. At the later stages, for the great companies, you find the capital. For the other ones, it's very, very tough today. Now, on the outlook, opinions are very different, right? I was just in New York 2 months ago, much more optimistic than when I talked to the bankers in Switzerland, for example, this morning. So, you know, some say 25, some say 26 when we see IPOs, et cetera, come back. But I think that's kind of the horizon. But, you know, again, it's difficult to predict at the larger scale just because, you know, there are many, many surprises that can happen in the current world. And we just don't know, right? Could be that there's some whatever somewhere. And then we again push back by a couple of months. But overall, I think the tendency is pretty much the same, right? We're looking, it's a bit that time horizon. And the message to entrepreneurs is clear, right? Hang in there. The next cycle is coming. That's for sure.
It still feels like to me the cycle has to correct. I mean, I'm myself in a financial technology startup and the things have dried out. There's nostalgia coming back about rebubbling, as you were saying, at the time when we last raised money was, you know, in 21, where things were much better than they are today. So, I guess, as you say, it depends on where you are in that sense. But again, in the interest of time, I think there's a lot of things we can discuss, and it's so varied in this field. But as you are specializing in tech or technology in general, from your point of view, as you like, you know, brainstorming ideas and exploring, monitoring the market and all that stuff, we've had last few months, you know, loaded with artificial intelligence coming in. That's been hugely disruptive, at least for more than a year now, with ChatGPT hitting the market. Just to name one example, I know I'm sure you a lot of your portfolio companies have flirted with the idea of adopting AI. But from your point of view, and I know venture capitalists, they bounce a lot of ideas off each other, because they see that, you know, they are at the forefront of innovation and they can smell and sense what's coming up. So for you, Yannick, what is the most exciting thing at the minute that you're considering or looking at or exploring in your capacity?
Let me name a few. I try to keep it crisp. And I think the first one, obviously you mentioned AI, you have to talk about it. But I think essentially if you take a step back, AI is nothing new, right? We have been backing AI companies since 2015. But what's new is essentially ChatGPT showed the world, you know, showed everyone what AI can do. And I think that's probably, for me, the title of 2023. And I hope, but I'm quite confident that actually people understand now that, you know, the benefits we will get out of this are bigger than potential, you know, negatives. When you think about AI, we backed a healthcare company in 2016 called K-Health, which leverages AI basically to do diagnosis. And the company is doing extremely well in the US. And, you know, will probably have a massive impact on our healthcare system. Essentially, instead of going to a doctor, you can just download the app and they do the diagnosis. It has been rolled out by major hospitals in the US. It's going very, very well. And, you know, just think about it. I don't know, is it 17, 18% of US GDP goes into healthcare? And we have a massive shortage of healthcare workers. You know, there was NHS in the UK, but we see it everywhere in the Western world. And so those solutions are only possible because of AI. And they can save our healthcare system, right? But there are many adjacent topics around AI. You know, if you use one of those apps, ChatGPT, Google Bard, whatever, try the voice button. It's amazing. Like, you can mumble something in there, it will understand you. And that's, I'm very excited about, you know, we think a lot about interfaces and voice first interfaces. The last 2-3 weeks, there has been a lot of hype about some new gadgets that have been launched. We have been talking about that for, again, 4 or 5 years. Digital self, I see in the data, people are very comfortable speaking to avatars, you know, very, very comfortable. So this is coming, right? Feels very weird, but there are tons of benefits we can get out of that to improve productivity, which we need to improve in the Western world as well. So, you know, it's really a blessing in disguise for me, AI, and I'm quite excited about that. It will, but it's being deployed across products, right? And so, another point, I just mentioned it, healthcare. I mentioned K-Health. We backed a company based in London, called Flow Health. It's a female health tech app, and it allows women to manage their menstrual cycle and to manage their health, basically, does diagnosis and so on. 60 million monthly active users, clear candidate to go very far as well. One space, I think, you know, that I'm particularly very excited about is data management. And if you think about it, I think the IDC, you know, expects to grow the space to grow 50x in the next decade alone. So in this decade, data, we've been speaking about it for, I don't know, since forever. But if you look at the growth, it's just exploding this decade. So tons of opportunities. We did a couple of investments in the space. One company called Sifflet in Paris allows you basically to manage enterprises, the entire data stack. And it's to monitor the entire data stack, doing it tremendously well. Another space, enterprise fintech. If you think about fintech, you know, there has been a lot of innovation on the consumer side. What we're seeing now is on the enterprise, basically, if you think about, you know, core banking infrastructure, it's quite archaic, but really across the board. And we backed one company again in London, the Bank of London. Now, we are a generalist firm, meaning we do everything software related. We don't do hardware unless it's a software first company, but we're also a thematic firm, meaning we go after specific themes like healthcare, like AI, like data that we like, but we are open to any ideas. I mean, you know, there are millions of entrepreneurs out there And all of them have a unique insight. That's what we're looking for. We are not pretending that we know what the future looks like. And so our job, it really is to find those people early on and to put us in the best possible situation to find them. What that means is we have a very strong network in the local ecosystems. So to go there on the ground, meet them, and nurture those networks. And obviously build the trust through our previous investments that entrepreneurs trust us and how we're going to work with them.
Throughout the conversation, you talked a lot about your blog and content you're pushing out on all the things that you're seeing in the market. So why don't you just walk us through a little bit, you know, what is this blog about and how can people find it?
So the reason why I launched this blog was COVID. You know, we're traveling quite a bit to meet the entrepreneurs. And while during COVID, I couldn't. So I thought, why probably have to take my business online, right? And in Europe, there aren't many bloggers. So it's quite lucky it became quite popular early on. I kind of stumbled on a successful idea. But the core is the following, you know, venture is an opaque industry because it mixes so many things, finance, people, product, markets, etc. So the idea is, you know, on a monthly basis, just share thoughts on tech markets, entrepreneurship. And this goes really from general observations, market observations, to more operational and on the field insights.
And how can I find it?
www.yannickoswell.com.
I'll put it down in the notes so that everyone listening to this piece can can refer to it and explore your content. Now, to finish up this very fascinating conversation of ours, moving back actually to Luxembourg again, as we're both from Luxembourg, you're in Luxembourg now. As we all know, we had recently elections in Luxembourg, and many people or insiders that I've talked to say that those elections were crucial for the future of the country in terms of competitiveness and many other challenges that the country, despite its growth and rich or comfortable situation that people are in, we still have to look for our future. So let me just combine two questions, if you don't mind. So maybe, how do you see essentially the impact of this government coming in? And if you personally had a chance to change anything from your point of view, what would you do?
Yeah. So I had a lot of discussions around that as well. And, you know, I think Luxembourg's recipe for success really comes down to one word. It's pragmatism. And, you know, Luxembourg has done great in the past because of it. And the new government comes across, at least the leader of the government, as very pragmatic. So, you know, I think it's very early, but I feel quite optimistic. I hope that, you know, they push in some new energy in the coming month. When it comes to, you know, to my industry, technology, it's very early. It's difficult to tell the impact they will have. Some great initiatives, you know, how I feel about it is, you know, if I would change, or not change, but, you know, go further with some things, great initiatives have been launched in the past in the tech industry. It's really remarkable what the government did. But I think now it's really the time to leverage the local stars we have and take them to the next stage. And we will see what will happen, what they will do. But yeah, today I can say I'm quite optimistic. And we as Mangrove, we are here whenever to help.
And on a more personal note, what would you change? I mean, outside of the political sphere now, because let me rephrase my question. We like asking questions in a sense, you know, if you're foreign or local, you've been in the country for a certain period of time. If there was anything you personally that you want to change, not in the PE or VC industry, what would you change?
Yeah, I think what I would change is essentially inject some, you know, courage, entrepreneurial mindset again in the local population. And the way to do that is through education, right? So in schools, etc., or make people, you know, give them the ambition or the desire to create stuff, whatever businesses, because that's really the backbone. And I think that got lost a little bit over the last decades. You know, my family, my parents were entrepreneurs, etc., but they are less and less. I think it's just important to change that, and it needs to come top down, right? Needs to be systematic.
So my challenge is, say, maybe it's the public service that needs to become less attractive to the local population, because for me, it's I've had the feeling that it's been essentially the number one competitor to attract good talent and kill off any desire to take risks, essentially, if that makes sense.
I shared some statistics recently around that. There's a very high proportion of Luxembourgers, and even higher proportion of Luxembourg natives that work for the government. And it's definitely an unhealthy ratio.
So no, on that last statistic, Yannick, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to speak to me today. It's been a very exciting and enriching conversation for me. And certainly, based on what you just said, I think there's lots of things that we can talk about in the future. So looking forward to having you back on the show very soon.
Thank you. And thanks so much for having me, and keep up the good work.
Thank you for listening to Luxembourg's leading business podcast. If you're listening to our show on Apple Podcasts, please rate our program using the 5-star scale and leave us a review. Or if you're tuning into Spotify, it takes just a few seconds to give us a rating on the overview page of our show. You can also email us with your feedback or suggestions at info@luxunplugged.com.